Faster Mai, hello and welcome to this episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. Change is coming, so why is government planning for far more homes than it needs? Those are the words of our guest on the programme today, author of the 2016 Isle of Man Population Atlas, Paul Crane. He's questioning government's commitment to figures in the Eastern Area Plan, which could see vast swathes of greenfield land zoned for development. So is the island's population really going to grow? Or is the Manx government pinning its hopes on a distant reality? The statistician seeks to answer those questions and more on this episode of Agenda. Paul Crane took part into the inquiry in the Eastern Area Plan last week to give his take on whether the Manx population is growing since the decline recorded in the 2016 census. He's also defended that census against those who questioned its accuracy. I asked him why he thinks the Cabinet Office has stuck to pre-2016 population projections to calculate how many homes are needed in the East.
They have not only stuck to the figures that came out in the as the draft area plan was being produced, they've actually stuck to the same figure that was used in the strategic plan, and that was based on projections from 2011. My views on this would be, in the strategic plan, using the 2011 projections and taking those forward, or using one of the projections from there, they were looking at 93,500 people by 2026. That projection must not be misunderstood, because it wasn't research that showed this is what's likely to happen. It was simply one of several if-then statements. If the migration grows, net migration grows by 500 a year, so 500 people come in than go out. If we have that level of migration and it continues through the period 2011 to 2026, then we'll have 93,500 people. So it wasn't a, we believe this is what's going to happen, it was just a figure. In the previous period up to 2011, that growth had maybe been about 800 a year. So it wasn't a particularly extreme figure, but nevertheless, if this figure 500 a year continued, that is what we'd have. And at the time of the 2016 inquiry into that new strategic plan, the revised strategic plan, there were a number of groups on the island saying, look, this growth is not happening. I was among that. I was on Moran Commissioners at the time leading up to that. And a letter was actually issued saying that at the inquiry into the strategic plan, other references to population would just not be countenanced. The figure, the best figure available, and it was only an if-then statement, the best figure available is this 500 growth a year, and we're not changing that, and you're not even going to let you talk about
why it. Why was that decided that that was the best figure? I can't quite understand that.
I think somehow that particular projection, the net migration gain of 500 people a year, had gained some sort of unassailable status somehow, somewhere.
So did it become a policy goal then to see that 500?
Well, that may be, but I'm not sure that was ever stated other than within the strategic plan. It was said that it would not be an input into the plan, it would be part of the plan, you know, so in that sense it's a sort of policy position. And then when it became clear the 2016 census results were released in 2017, and it was apparent that not only had we not been growing with 500 more people coming in a year than going out, we'd actually had population decline, you know, 1,183 people decline between 2011 and 2016. And in my mind, a strategic plan should be subject to some numerical revision every time there's a census. That's what the census is for. You know, that's exactly what it's for. That it affects, it influences our planning. But that didn't happen. We moved on with the area plan for the East, and it produced a housing and population paper, the first one in 2018. It had some quite serious errors in it. It was good to see it be replaced. But what we've got for 2019 recognises that we've got this change, recognises that if we were going to reach a population of 93,500 by 2026, then at the time of the 2016 census, we'd have been over 87,000, and we weren't. We were down at 83,000 odd. So we had a big shortfall already, but it did two things. It suggested that we stick with using that projection based on the 2016 data. So all the projections were revised. There were four of them, but this 500 a year growth was the one that was chosen out of the four. I'm sure that the statisticians in the economic affairs were not saying this is the one that will be. They were saying these are four if-then statements. If the population is affected by 1,000 people more moving a year than going out, you'd get this, you know, if, and they had one that was, if there was no movement in and out. I asked for, I requested a projection based on the decline that had taken place, but they were not keen to base that just on 5 years. So they produced a sort of version that was useful to me looking at this. But not only did they stick with this 500 growth from 2016 onwards, they then decided that although it would lead to a different required number of houses, roughly half the number of houses in the eastern area, the strategic plan had suggested 2,440 houses. The new document suggested about half of that. But they decided that they should still go ahead with the original number, even though it was absolutely clear that the population growth hadn't happened.
Well, is there a statistical basis for doing that, for not doing it short term used on the census data? Is there a reason for doing that? Because I suppose to the public, they can't really understand why this is happening. A lot of politicians can't, but perhaps we don't know something the Cabinet Office does.
Well, one of the difficulties in this is that, and there was a discussion at the inquiry that's taking place this week, there was a discussion there about how long an average you should use. You know, one way of looking at what's happened is that when we reached 2011, maybe it didn't happen straight away, maybe 2013, the population stopped growing and started declining. You can look at that as the tide has turned, you know, the sea has changed. We've got a whole new ball game now. We've got to work with where we're at. On the other hand, you can look at it and say there had been strong, sustained population growth since 1986. You know, evidence of that. It had been running at a higher level than the projections that were being used through to 2011. That is the situation that may well be restored. You know, I wouldn't like to say that we won't be seeing growth again as we move forward. There's some evidence of growth there at the moment. What has happened since the 2016 census? Our monitoring of that is really not good, you know, and I've put this in the atlas. I've said it at every opportunity. Jersey is able to say with some confidence at the end of each year, they produce a population report. It comes out the following June and they say at the end of the year, we had this many people. And they've based that on a wide range of data and they put that forward as the population. Here, our population measurement in terms of where we're at now, it appears in Comin reports of a fashion, but it's based entirely on the number of people registered with GPs. And because that's, for various reasons, time lags and so on, is never quite the same as the population, there's actually a constant deployed then to bring that into line. So that is the only figure we've got, and that figure suggests that the under 65 population was identical in March 2019 to the figure at the census in March, April 2016. So in 3 years, the under 65 population hasn't changed a bit, not even one. You know, it's absolutely identical. There has been growth, but that has been in the over 75 population. So since the census, we've perhaps added 800 to the population. There must have been more movement in than out, although that could also, some of that at least, could be the result of people living longer, because in the Isle of Man, between 1950 and 2010, the average age of death increased 1 year every 6.3 years, which is an extraordinary figure. You know, we've been living longer as time's gone on.
You have said as well, we have one of the oldest populations in the world.
We have, yes. Yeah. We've got a hyper-aged population, using the UN definition, with over 21% of the population aged over 65. But it really isn't. We can't say with any certainty that the population is growing. Using another source, looking at schools data, the population in the schools through to September 2018, I haven't seen new figures yet at the start of this term, but that is showing that as over the three-year period since 2016, the students who were in year one and then move on to year two, year three, if they're not growing. You know, same with year two, the cohorts are not growing. The slight decline. I'd be happy if somebody said it was flatlining, you know, that the numbers in this year group are not changing. And the number of births are continuing to go down. You know, the census showed we've got nearly 9% fewer women of childbearing age. It's usually taken as 15 to 45 to fit in with the census spans. The number of people in childbearing age down by 4%, and the births are down from the peak in 2010, births of 1,020 births. Last year, they were 717. So this is a 30% decline in births in 8 years. That's quite remarkable. And that, too, would be evidence that what the census is saying, that young people are moving out, population is declining, that's what's affecting their births. I know part of the answer is that fertility levels are changing. That's the number of births that women have. There's evidence of growing gap, a later age of first birth, and growing gap before a second birth or fewer second births. And that evidence is common across quite a lot of European countries, but it doesn't explain the 30% drop in births. That's because we've got 9% fewer women of childbearing age, you know, and that's because they've moved out.
You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Well, should we take it from all that, that perhaps the census is showing a trend rather than some kind of anomaly or something particular to that period of time?
Absolutely. I'm taking the census data at face value because there's no evidence otherwise. You know, I wish we hadn't had the need for the imputation side of things, although the question that then arises is the Isle of Man has resisted using imputation over a very long period of time, including the time when Mr. Cass was in charge of the censuses. You know, I know I phoned the census department when I was producing the book to ask about imputations. And I said, you know, why do we not need to make counts like this? And they said, well, if we've got a problem with a house that hasn't given a return, we use every method possible to get the figures. You know, we phone them again and again. We get in touch. We talk to neighbours. We do also. Now, in this census, they've had, where there've been no returns, they've had a team who've been going out to try and
get those
get these in. You know, so they've tried to do that. That would seem the appropriate way. So I see the evidence as being consistent. We knew before the census that things were changing. Recruitment was getting more difficult in the island. We knew that was happening. When we saw that there was a decline, it wasn't a surprise. It matches with what's showing in the economy. It matches with what's showing in house prices. It matches with what's showing in births. This is all consistent. You know, I'm not looking at data that I'm thinking is conflicting.
Let's talk about what's ongoing, which might change that. Government has levers that it can use to grow, particularly the economically active population, and it's trying to do that. Is it too soon for us to make an assessment until we've seen the progress of things such as the Visit Isle of Man scheme, the national holidays, the relaxation of work permits? Will these have a bearing, or do you think they're too small fry to make any difference to our population?
This would be where it would be really helpful to have some detailed data being produced, you know, better data about what's actually happening to the population. For those people who found that it was a shock when the 2016 census showed decline, if we'd been using the sort of approach that Jersey had been using, we'd have known at the end of each year, you know, we'd have had figures and they'd have been beginning to show. I think we'd have had better data on that. I think there's a very wide range of things that's affecting population. This is why it's a very difficult area to make policy. You know, policy also almost needs to be very simple, very, very clear. Back in the last time that the Isle of Man claimed to have a population policy was in the 1960s. And although there was never an official figure, the governor of the time, who was also the sort of Chancellor of the Exchequer, he came up with a figure that we should put in a population of 75,000. And it was there as a figure that was being aimed for. There were changes in the taxation and so on. There was advertising and all sorts. This figure was loosely there. His aim was that we should have that by the year 2000. And the extraordinary thing is it happened, you know, almost just like that. You know, we probably reached the 75,000 just before the year 2000, even though the policy had long gone away. You know, there was still this sort of driver on and it achieved that. The policy that we have at the moment is at times lacks clarity. You know, at the heart of it is that statement you made there, growing the working age population. It doesn't clarify to what extent that's getting people to work to 65 who are already here. Indeed, where we have seen growth in the size of the workforce, as opposed to the working age population, where we've seen growth in the workforce, I'm not even clear to what extent that's because women who thought they were going to retire at 60 are now required, they're not going to get a pension.
So they're working longer. 66.
Yeah. There's 500 women roughly every year in the Isle of Man cross the age of 60, you know, so do they still retire at that point, or do they carry on in a working role? The opportunities to work have opened up. So is the workforce growing because we're pulling more people into it over 60? Is that part of the aim of growing the working age population? Or is it just growing the 15 to 65? What exactly is it?
Well, I think it appears, to be attracting people of certain skills for certain business sectors. And also, this was one that we've all touched on in that debate, is ensuring young people come back.
Yes, yes. And that's, we don't even have good figures on the numbers who do come back, because the two graduate surveys that were undertaken, they were great in doing what they attempted to do, but neither of them had solved the problem of, when you're writing to students who are perhaps in their final year at university, which I think both surveys used, and you're asking them to reply to a questionnaire, is it possible that those who don't reply are less likely to return than those who do reply? So when you do your calculations and say, oh, we think 45% will be back or are planning to come back, is that 45% representative of the whole population or just the group who responded, who maybe are those with more Manx links? So we haven't got a good base data on this, you know. That again makes it difficult to identify this. But I know at the inquiry, there was reference made to the National Insurance holidays and reference made to the Locate IM program and various other initiatives. I welcome all of those. I know too that since I wrote the Atlas, there's been an increase in the preschool credit vouchers, which would enable, well, might encourage people to move here, because in the UK now, there's free nursery provision in schools for 30 hours a week for 3 and 4 year olds. So that's in schools with teachers under the control of the head teacher, you know, as part of the school. That hasn't run out everywhere yet because there've been problems making it happen, but that's the intention. And in many parts of the UK, that's what you'd be offered. Here, nursery care is in private hands and it is expensive. You know, if you're a working mum or something, working parents and you're trying to afford that figure, it's a big chunk of your salary to have a child in nursery care. So although the figures have increased and that's been good to see, we've got some other areas where perhaps there haven't been changes. So if you're moving to the Isle of Man and you've got a child age 16, just finished GCSEs, going into sixth form, you discover at some point that they'll get nothing towards their fees until they've lived here for a minimum of 4 years. You know, that comes as quite a blow. So we've still got one or two areas which actually don't encourage return.
And that's the case in for many benefits, I believe, in terms of the amount of time you have to be on the island before you're eligible.
Yes, I mean, some of those are simply making sure that we don't have the sort of inward migration, which is to access benefits not available elsewhere. And that we are very small to simply run schemes like that. So I understand some of that, but I don't think we've got real clarity about what the impact is of the changes we've made or the things we haven't yet changed.
And should they be viewed in the context, as was mentioned in the inquiry, that every other country or many other countries offer similar schemes for a similar purpose?
Absolutely. This is an issue. In a sense, you can see how this creates some of the reaction against inward migration. But the reality is that in Western Europe and in North America too, the flow of inward migrants, people who are of working age, who are coming in to work and contribute to the economy, that's a net input to the economy. You know, it helps the economy. It helps to pay for the retirement costs and health costs of the older population because you've got these people in and working. And there are many countries in Europe that would still wish that they could have a fairly open door to any immigrants who have skills and so on that they can offer. You can understand the problem with that, that in some people's eyes the flows have been too great, and it's always going to be about a balance, and it's going to be about the speed of assimilation and other things. It is part of the picture. In the Isle of Man, it's been intriguing that in the period where we lost 1.4% of the population, the UK was adding 600,000 a year or something to its population. So it added 3 million, we lost 1,000. Quite extraordinary that at that time of people coming into the UK, they weren't coming here. You know, we weren't picking up people from the UK. That's right. And I think we don't have any measures now that tell us for the population that's moving in, we don't have any indicators of where they're from, you know, to what extent the people moving in are, you know, maybe from further afield than we had in our previous periods of population growth, you know.
So we don't know the types of people we're attracting. I mean, which nationalities, where they're from in the world.
That's
that kind
right.
Of thing.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
What their language is and so on. Yeah. Mm.
Reasons for moving here, I imagine, as well as the very different reasons for different. Mm.
We have some interesting schemes set up. So I know the there's a couple of language groups on the island. The Church on the Promenade there runs a group for people moving to the Isle of Man to help them learn the language. You know, and that helps assimilation and so on. So it's good to see that many of the people coming in are indeed bringing talents. You know, they're coming into to healthcare sometimes at senior levels in terms of being highly qualified doctors and so on. So many of these people bring a great asset, but we've no clarity as to what we're trying to achieve in this grow the working population. And so far, there's very little evidence that's happened. As I say, the under 65 population haven't risen a jot between 2016 March and March 2019.
Does Brexit affect, will that affect the Isle of Man's efforts to grow the economically active population? I mean, if we're not seeing, you will assume that as one of the main tenets of the Brexit sort of mantra was to slow down on the inward migration into the UK. Will that have a knock-on effect on the Isle of Man, or might we see the opposite as we saw when the UK grew and we didn't? Is that relationship clear?
Yeah, and probably best just saying yes, you know, that yes, it might do, and it
might
not
do, yeah.
You know, goodness only knows where we're going on Brexit. It's still far from clear at any level, really. Will there be another referendum?
For example, we mentioned a healthcare workers who come to the Isle of Man. There was an interesting comment from Bill Shimmons about the depreciating value of the pound and how those who may come to work in certain sectors obviously send a remittance back home, and there's areas like this will become less attractive to them. So could that have an impact?
You can certainly see that. To be able to measure that impact, extremely difficult, but it becomes another one of those great range of things that I think affect population. Because when we're looking at a population, sort of the amazing thing, when you're looking at decisions on births and decisions on migration, these are being affected not just by the real world out there, they're being affected by people's perceptions of the world. So many studies on migration are about perceptions. You know, why did the person move between A and B? There have been many studies showing that if you ask them the week that they've moved, they'll give you one set of answers. But if you ask them 10 years later, they'd actually have a different set of reasons why they moved, some of which were things they didn't know about before they moved, you know. But it becomes part of their understanding of why they did something, or our understanding of why we've done something. So research into migration is a very difficult area because perceptions are involved. And that's, will the Isle of Man be perceived as a stronger or weaker post-Brexit by people from outside the UK, by people from inside the UK? It's hard to say. Maybe from those within a post-Brexit UK, maybe the Isle of Man would offer a new attraction. You know, you can't go to Europe with quite the same certainty. So maybe the Isle of Man would have something to offer. But there were some interesting comments made on that first day of the inquiry about the drivers of the economy, the role of e-gaming, and the possibility that we won't see continued growth in e-gaming. You know, it's levelling out. haven't got the same unique selling points that we had at some stage for that. Concerns over the extent to which the Isle of Man economy is prone to the influences of artificial intelligence, replacing some jobs, and even a suggestion we could see some thousands of jobs in the Isle of Man go with that. So these are all part of the picture. But there's another part of this too, when we talk about planning on this level. And one of the things that the Area Plan for the East is trying to do is, in planning for a population that looks as if we're not going to reach it by 2026, is this the population we get to in 2031 or 2036? Who knows? That depends on a lot of things. But if we're planning for that population now, that is giving away the ability to plan nearer the time. My concern would be that the climate change issues, you know, the Isle of Man has declared a climate emergency. We are at the moment waiting for a report from the transition team. And if we're moving to zero carbon emissions by 2050 or 2035, what do those changes involve in terms of planning? You know, that certainly you would anticipate that. I know in some parts of the world, some of the big cities are attempting to increase their housing density to get people living closer together so that they're not spreading over rural land. They are looking at being very careful about how close they build to floodplains, because the likelihood of increased extreme events is there. There are all sorts of planning implications to this. And if we've made the decisions now and I'm sorry that area's in the housing reserve, you know, if it gets called on, it'll be needed. Are we still in the position to change that? It was great news to hear the planning inspector say that it had been made clear from Attorney General's advice to him that the figures that are there
could be changed, recommended to be changed.
Could be changed, that's right, could be recommended for changing. Mm. And it was good to hear that, because I think the planning is far more effective if two things. If one, it's based on the most recent evidence, and two, it doesn't attempt to predict too far ahead where you're going. You know, it needs to be just-in-time planning, really, that you're looking at it. So it's under regular review, but every time there's new data out, that gets put into the picture.
Author of the 2016 Isle of Man Population Atlas, Paul Crane. That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this episode online via Spotify or through the Manx Radio website as a podcast. But for now, gurumayu and goodbye.